This is Don Hussig, and you're listening to Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. Our interview today is with Anthony Thornton, an able veteran from the conflict in Iraq. Hi, Anthony. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, let's get started with a short, brief introduction from you. Tell the listeners about yourself. You know, how did you come to, you know, be the person I'm interviewing right now?
My name's Anthony Thornton. I live in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm a Navy veteran. I spent 10 years in the Navy, and my last year was spent at Camp Buka, Iraq. And last year, I came down with symptoms for brain cancer, had it removed, and now I have surgery set up for next week for another tumor to be removed.
Okay.
So, and,
Until I met you, I knew very little about, you know, how the military, whether it's here in this country or overseas, I knew very little about military waste disposal practices, but I do have a lot of background on waste disposal practices, you know, that are non-military. In fact, the Cancer Action New York group that I'm the director of, one of our first big projects was the elimination of open waste burning. And what we came to find right at the start was that in 1997, there was a document published by the US EPA and the New York State Department of Health and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. As I recall, the title was Evaluation of Emission from the Open Burning of Household Waste in Barrels. And this is one form of open burning, burning a lot of plastics and mixed solid waste. And that report made it so clear that this was a very harmful practice. We referred to their report over and over again in our advocacy for bringing an end to, for eliminating open waste burning in New York State. And eventually, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation banned the waste burning practice, you know, that we're referring here to, this open waste burning. You know, no more burning of plastics and household trash in New York State. Still against the law. And that was, that ban went into effect in 2009 here in New York State. But the scientific knowledge that was the basis for taking that action was established way back in 1997. So you just see how slow these things are and how dangerous it is to use chemicals carelessly, in this case, burning chemicals and creating other chemicals. What I'm thinking is this. Give us a really, can you just describe the experience? Describe in the most detail that you want to, you know, share the experience of being there when these waste fires were burning at Camp Buka.
It was a daily thing. You know, everybody has trash daily, and they burned it daily. And it's such a thick, large black cloud that would come over base every day. It would cast shadows on everything. And the stench, you know, it's like a burning tires or chemicals, you know, a real strong, make you cough, want to run inside smoke that came over every day. And the base I was at, we had over 20,000 detainees and over 7,000 military. So if you can imagine how much waste over 27,000 people had to throw away daily, all that got burned. You know, if you throw it in the trash or, you know, your human waste, every bit of trash from over 27,000 people got burned daily, no matter what it was. And it was horrible.
That is horrible. That is horrible. That, to compare that to the biggest fires that, you know, that I have ever observed, I, you know, focused a lot on the big fires because that's, you know, that's, of course, the big problem. And the big fires that I was aware of in my experience here in New York State were these fires that were probably, you know, maybe a quantity of, say, maybe as much as, say, like a dump truck load, and it will be in a gravel pit or some, you know, corner of a dairy farm where it was this waste material that was accumulated from doing the, you know, the major big business of producing milk in New York State in the, you know, the this day and age, a lot of plastics, a lot of, you know, mixed type materials like rubbers and papers and lots of mixed solid waste. And I recall, you know, smelling that, but, you know, nothing comparable to what you're talking about, because this fire, this big one that I was, you know, the most close to and breathed the most smoke from was, you know, a considerable distance away, you know, probably nearly half a mile away, or at least a quarter of a mile away. And it was just, you know, not nearly the size of fire. And it was just, it would happen, like, say, once every, you know, they don't accumulate trash that fast. You know, it's maybe like they would burn that once every 3 or 4 months or every 6 months. Nothing compared to what you're describing here. And this, what comes to my mind first is, why did it have to happen? You know, why did it have to happen when EPA and DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, and New York State Department of Health, when they had studied this way back in 1997 and produced this data? You know, they actually measured the releases of dioxins and the releases of PCBs and the releases of carcinogenic metals like lead and arsenic and cadmium and chromium. They measured, they burned trash and they captured the smoke and they measured how much of these chemicals was in that. And then they published a report in 1997 stating that this was a heavily productive source of dioxins, new dioxins, you know, dioxins that weren't present in the trash. It was just that when you burned the trash in these open fires, that you created dioxin. You created new PCBs. You know, PCBs are intentionally produced. They were intentionally produced and used in industrial settings. But now this is not the same as that. This is new PCBs being produced by burning plastics and mixed solid waste. And then these metals being released that were present in the waste. The metals were present in the waste. But the dioxins and PCBs, they were newly created, released to the environment, and the EPA and DEC and DOH, they all took the position that this was harmful and that it needed to be brought to an end. So I'm just thinking, how could it be that in 1997 there were government entities well informed about this practice, this open waste burning, and yet when was it? When was it when you were present there at Camp Buca?
2008, 2009.
So there you go, 2008 and 2009, over 10 years later, And a practice that should have never been occurring is occurring in a way that's truly the most harmful. You know, these fires and these gravel pits and these farms, at least it's kind of rather relatively remote from the people in the vicinity usually. And it is true that people also do this and continue to do it in their backyards in these burning barrels, these 50-gallon drums, and they burn the trash. But right on the New York State Department of Health website, it states that another reason, you know, a reason for not doing this, if you're doing this in your backyard, then you're poisoning your kids, you're poisoning your family, you're poisoning your pets. It just, they pointed out the breathing, the smoke from the trash burning as harm to the person that was burning the trash and their family and then their, you know, any living things there. So what I'd like to do, you know, as we go along here, what I'd really like to do is just talk about how this came to happen. Who decides? Do you have any idea who decides how the waste will be disposed of on the base?
Well, I know there's a civilian contractor that the government contracted to do the burning. And I know there's a couple of them, but I know one was KBR. And there are, you know, hundreds of class action suits against them because they did do it wrong. That's known. They had rules to do the burning, and they didn't do it how they were supposed to. I don't know, you know, how you could burn that or, you know, make it better, but
yeah, exactly.
They did not do it correctly. And,
well, it's even worse, you know. So not only did they do it, but they didn't do it correctly. That's way out.
Yes.
Tell us, you know, just give us the whole series of experiences with your health that you had as you went from the earlier exposures and as this kind of like progressed. And, you know, just recap, you know, you stated that you were diagnosed with brain cancer. Give us a little more detail in the health problems that you encountered from the start with the Camp Buca burn pit fires.
Well, while I was there, the smoke, it affected me. It coughing, trouble breathing, and I'm a person that worked out every day, You know, it was my release. I'm a very, very in shape person, but it brought me down. And I went to medical on base there and was diagnosed with bronchitis, and they gave me medicine and inhalers to help that. So I used the medicine and inhalers. When I left in 2009, I processed out of the Navy and came home, and the VA said, oh, I have asthma. Well, I was 30, 31 years old at the time and have never had problems breathing in my life. I don't think you can catch asthma. So they gave me more inhalers for that. And that was late 2009. May of 2012, I was actually having a phone conversation, and for lack of a better word, I had a brain fart. I could not think of or get out of my mouth what I wanted to say. And it got to the point where when I got home and I was telling my wife about it, she, you know, just asked a question, you know, what's her name, and pointed at my little girl, and I did not know. I did not know my own birthday. I couldn't talk. I couldn't read. I couldn't remember my children's names. And I thought I was having a stroke. And we went to the emergency room. They did a CAT scan. Didn't find anything. Basically said I was dehydrated and sent me home. I spoke with my primary doctor. He ordered an MRI. He didn't like the way everything sounded. And then they found a 1-inch tumor under my left frontal lobe, and basically it was swelling and causing all the problems and, you know, forgetting how to read and function properly. So I made it to the hospital via ambulance after that, and had it removed, and just finished chemotherapy this past May, and MRI right after that, and it already showed abnormality, and now I have a large grape tumor that I have to have removed next week.
It's a very, very terrible experience that you're going through here with this. This is where the science stands. There are a considerable number of chemicals the exposure to which is known to cause cancer. Dioxin, and this is one of the 200-some, there's a considerable number of dioxins, but the one most potent and well-studied of the dioxins, it is listed by the International Agency for Research on Cancer to be a known human carcinogen. PCBs, and these are all chemicals that are released by the burning of trash, such as what was occurring there at Cambuca. PCBs, all the PCBs, they are also listed by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is part of the World Health Organization. They are listed as known to cause cancer in humans. You know, the top number one, this is number one classification by the IARC, known human carcinogens. Arsenic and lead, these are heavy metals that are also released by burning trash, mixed solid waste. Like, they are certain that they also are as known carcinogens, maybe one or so of them be a suspected human carcinogen. They refer to as polyaromatic hydrocarbons, AHs. Many of these chemicals are pyrene, the best soot. They're basically soot. Benzoapyrene is a known human carcinogen. Many of the other PAHs studied. So the story is that in breathing smoke from those fires, you will and suspected human carcinogen. And see, we fully state that it was definitely the case that your cancer was caused by that, but it is definitely true to state that it is highly likely that your cancer was caused by that, because And in fact, you can see, you go even further than that. You can say that the major, if this was indeed your largest, you know, one of your major exposures to chemical carcinogens, you know, these specific chemicals, then it is also correct to state that a major part of what caused you to develop this brain cancer was your exposure to those smoke, the chemicals in the smoke that was emitted by those fires at Camp Buca. And that is the, if the military or the lawyers, you know, defending the contractors, if they take the approach that this cannot be proven to this beyond a shadow of a doubt, this, you know, absolute, you know, say like who pulled the trigger, kind of just exacting detail that is required in, say, a homicide case or something of this nature, it should be argued that this is not the stage of scientific knowledge where that is even a remote possibility, and that in for justice to be done and for reason and common sense and scientific knowledge to be utilized, what can be said is what I said, that your cancer was caused in large part by that exposure. And that is the final word on it. It's all that can be said at this stage of scientific knowledge. And that should indeed make them liable for this harm. That's the way I see it, in having had a lot of experience with these exposures and the way it's argued and what the thinking is on this in the scientific community and in say, in government and these various places. Tell me, what has it been like, you know, when you started discussing this matter with authorities, you know, people that were decision makers, people that had the, you know, that had the power to stop this or had the power to help you, what was it like? You know, can you describe some of your efforts? You've given us some insight. You stated some about what, you know, what you talked to about, you know, describing your symptoms and then how things went. Do you want to, you know, is there any more you would like to add about what it was like? You know, say, did you ever try to get him to stop doing the Bernie? Did any of your buddies or any people on the base try to get the Bernie stopped? You know, how did that go, you know? Anything on that?
No, honestly, you know, I didn't think twice about it while I was there. Now, I it did affect me, and I did write it down in my paperwork that it affected me. You know, they ask you when you leave a base, you know, and you process out, were you subject to any environmental hazards? And I wrote down yes. And the giant black toxic cloud that came over base every day.
Yep, yep.
But, you know, I like I said, I was, you know, young, fit, ready to conquer the world, and I had no thought or idea that I would ever, you know, have two brain surgeries because of this black cloud that came over every day. I didn't, at that point, I didn't think twice about it.
Okay. It appears to me that I understand it. My father was in the Navy, and he has told us, you know, much about what it was like to serve, and you do. You just kind of, you accept a lot of hardship and a lot of difficulties that are coming at you because of the, you know, being in a conflict, in a war. And you just kind of get in that mindset of accepting and just dealing with it, you know, and just doing the best you can. And I can see it. I can see how that would be the way it went, you know.
Yeah.
I've contacted my congressman about this because in having the expert knowledge that I have about the open burning and about the cancer risk involved with it, and see, it's not just cancer risk, and I want to just kind of digress a little bit here. I want to add on that, you know, there are other people that were exposed to this smoke that may well be exhibiting totally different symptoms, and yet it's likely, and you know, there's this matter of it being associated. These chemicals that we're talking about, the dioxins and the PCBs in particular, they are a part of a large group of chemicals referred to by scientists as persistent, and they don't break down in the environment. These chemicals that are released there at Camp Buca will be around for a very long time. They don't break down in the environment. They are persistent, organic, and this organic in this case means hydrocarbon. They're made of carbon and hydrogen, and then they have chlorines and various other halogens, these other chemicals, elements, attached to this hydrocarbon backbone. They're persistent organic pollutants, you know, it means they're poison. They come into the environment due to human activities. They are all toxic. They are endocrine disruptors, which means that they interfere with how the endocrine hormones and the endocrine glands in the body operate, they cause changes in genetic material. Some of them cause changes in the genetic material that is what is called a lesion, and what when there's a number of lesions can accumulate to the point where it is a diagnosable. You know, it starts a cell line, this cancer cell line, and then that goes on further and becomes a diagnosable cancer. There are other effects. It's called epigenetic. And this is another way in which these chemicals damage the chromosomes, basically the blueprint for the biochemistry that goes on in the organism. Because these epigenetic effects, where the packaging of the DNA, this outer material of the chromosome, where that packaging is changed to the extent that the control of the genes is not as it was before these changes. So you not only have damage to the genes so that they're not producing the right biochemicals as they function, but you have changes in the controlling of the genes, so that even if you had your normal gene, then the gene wouldn't be in the proper control, and it might be producing too much or too little of its product. So there's a huge quantity of harm that occurs from being exposed to this type of chemical. The diseases that are associated with it are cancer, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, immune system diseases such as these autoimmune diseases such as the Crohn's disease, and I think Lou Gehrig's disease is one of those. Reproductive problems, behavioral deficit disorders, and in this case, that behavioral deficit aspect of it largely can be attributed to, I'm not going to say it. Let's just leave it at that. There are behavioral deficit disorders. Kids, say ADHD. I can't remember what that acronym stands for right now, but the ADHD, this behavioral problem of kids being hyper, that is attributed to exposure to these types of chemicals. This has become so well known now and so well studied that in 2010, the World Health Organization, they published a report titled Persistent Organic Pollutants. They're talking about dioxins and PCBs and some old pesticides that are like this, same kind of chemicals. Persistent Organic Pollutants Impact on Child Health is the name of the report, published in 2010. This is a landmark document. It's probably the most important public health document ever published thus far in human activities and public health. And it states, it sends a warning. It says, the recommendation of this report is that effort be taken worldwide, and this is not talking about kids that were burning that smoke or anybody that was breathing that smoke. This is for everyone. This is for everyone on Earth that has had the exposure, the background, the much lower level of exposure than what you had. For the background exposures, these chemicals are so dangerous that WHO says take action to minimize the exposure that children, all children in the whole world, get these chemicals. And that's where you're at. That's where you are at, and your fellow military, Navy people and the people that were there and all those civilians, those Iraqi civilians, that's where all those people are at, that they've had what is described as an excess exposure to these chemicals. And what that means is that you've had that particular exposure added on top of the background exposure that everyone gets just from living in this contaminated world. See, another aspect of these persistent organic pollutants is they're semi-volatile, and that means that they do not stay where they were released. They don't stay where they're, say, like PCBs. They're oil, a heavy oil, dumped on the ground. That's not the end of it. They evaporate under, say, temperatures such as in the summertime, the warmer type temperatures. They evaporate, they rise up into the air, they move across the earth, and then eventually they will deposit out, oftentimes in colder climates, to the extent that the Arctic is so heavily contaminated with these chemicals that people that live, the Inuit, who live far away from any of these sources of these chemicals, they have some of the worst problems, health effects. They have kids that are born with serious immune system type problems that are attributed to their exposure to these chemicals. Another matter that's involved with these chemicals is that they not only move around in the environment, they bioaccumulate at the top of food chains. So say like with the eagles. The reason our national symbol became nearly extinct was because of the eagles being at the top of the food chain and consuming these fish, largely fish and other, you know, animals, that had body burdens of DDT, which is a POP, these persistent organic pollutants, similar to the dioxins and PCBs that you were exposed to, and then the other chemicals, too. There was DDT, there was PCBs, there was dioxins, because that's the point. These chemicals, they are out in the environment. They are part of the environment to the extent that they are part of the animal fat of all the animals, you know, people animal fat, fish animal fat, eagle animal fat, bear animal fat, coyote animal fat, all the animal fat in the world contains various quantities of these dioxins, PCBs, Myrex, toxaphene, hexachlorobenzene, DDT, all these chemicals that are similar to the extent that they dissolve in fat tissue. That's the, you know, a key aspect of these POPs. What makes them so dangerous is that they last a long time in the environment, they move around, so they're widespread, and they also dissolve in fat tissue, which means they bioaccumulate at the top of food chains, and people are at the top of a food chain where, you know, carnivores and eat a lot of animal-type products. So you have had exposures other than what happened there, but that is a major part of your exposure to these chemicals. And it's a very, very serious matter, and I wish you the best of luck in dealing with it to the best of your abilities. And my recommendation to you, and I say this to everybody that I talk to about POP exposure, is that you would make the effort, you know, take the action that you can do your own self to limit your ongoing exposures to these chemicals. And it's all about the presence of these chemicals in animal fat. If you choose to eat less animal fat, you'll be immediately lowering your continuing ongoing exposure to these chemicals. And once you've been harmed by them, in my mind, you know, no doctor says don't keep taking poison when you've been poisoned. But, you know, they probably do, actually. I never heard them say it. But anyways, it's just this common sense, logical, reasonable way of looking at this, that you want to take action to stop being exposed to the very same chemicals that you've had an excess exposure to and that you have received, as you have been harmed by. So I'm putting that out there for you and other people that have had this experience, that a necessary step you can take on your own is to cut back on the consumption of these foods that are contaminated with these chemicals. It's just the way the chemicals work. They're lipophilic. And that's pointed to in that WHO report I mentioned just now. They state that eating low on the food chain is the way to go in getting the kids' exposure down, and that foods like hot dogs, hamburgers, bologna, you know, all these animal, these foods that contain a larger quantity of animal fat than, you know, just a straight piece of meat with some fat associated with it, those are the foods that are the most heavily contaminated, you know, they contain the most of these chemicals, and that these are the foods to start cutting out of the diet to not have, you know, this exposure ongoing. And I just wanted to share that with you because I thought it was my duty, you know, to help you understand the big picture, you know, the total picture on what has happened to your health, and, you know, help you understand truly why it happened so fast and all that's involved that's going on here, you know. And I did start in saying that I contacted my congressman about this. That was where I started to diverge here. And I just want to say one more thing about that. I've asked him to look into whether this practice is ongoing. You know, you stated here with me that this burning is still going on. You know, we might have talked about that before we got in the interview. So I should basically ask you that again if I didn't ask you before in the interview itself. According to your best knowledge, do you believe that this trash burning continues on the basis?
Yes.
Okay. And I've contacted Congressman William Owens in the New York State, the U.S. House of Representatives, and requested that he determine for himself and for me whether this trash burning practice goes on in, you know, in 2013 when the EPA was publishing a document in 1997 that said this was a very dangerous way, you know, of creating chemicals that harm people and wildlife and everything that, you know, has fat tissue in it, harms all these living organisms. This is not right. It should never have happened. It should have ended, you know, before you were processed out. It's wrong that those contractors didn't do it right, but the point is they should never have done any of it. It shouldn't have been done. There is no right way to do it. I guarantee you. They might say there's a right way. There is no right way to do it. That's why it was banned in New York State. That's why our Cancer Action New York brought a petition to US EPA way back, you know, probably the early 2000s, asking, it was Christine Todd Whitman, who was the EPA administrator at that time, requesting that she ban this practice nationwide, you know, ban open trash burning nationwide, and they wouldn't do it. They just ignored our petition. This should never have happened. In 2009, there shouldn't be any trash burning in Camp Booker Rock, for sure. No way.
Correct.
So what I'm just thinking now is, what more would you like to say? You know, you know your mind, and you know what you feel is in your heart to say, you know. What more do you want to say about this?
Well, I know there, before somebody told me about it, I didn't think twice. But there are hundreds of thousands of people coming back affected from this. And I guarantee you know somebody that has been over there that has been subject to that, and they have problems. They may not know about it. They may not think twice about it. You know, I thought I was having headaches just because I was having headaches. But it needs to get out. It needs to be known there to help people. And they need to stop. They need to find a different way. With all that trash, I mean, if you're going to have that many people and somebody's in charge to make sure it gets done properly, they need to do it properly.
That's right.
I mean, that's their job, and the effect of it is my cancer. I speak with a lot of people on Facebook, widows. Their husbands didn't make it. They died of brain cancer, lung cancer.
Wow.
It's crazy. Something needs to be done, and I hope something does get done.
Yep, and I think the two things you stated there are the two keys to this. The knowledge, you know, having the people that matter the most in this, and that will probably be the most likely to do something about it too, having them be informed about the harm of being exposed to that smoke, and then that knowledge turning into the pressure that it takes to bring an end to the practice. So people aren't continuing to be poisoned like this and continuing to be set up to develop cancer before they're processed out or after they're processed out or whenever it happens to them. It's a major source of cancer risk, which means, you know, it's so simple. Cancer is caused by exposure to chemicals that cause cancer. The more exposure you get to those chemicals, the higher your risk, and that just means it's more likely that you will develop cancer. It's that simple. And it's got to change. It's got to change.
Yeah, I think more people need to know about it that don't know about it to push that.
What I'll do,
I knew nothing about it before all this.
I'm going to put your interview, I believe that this interview right here would be a good step in people knowing about this. I'm going to put your interview up on the internet either today or tomorrow, depending on my timing with getting out of this camper here, because I don't have high-speed internet, but I need high-speed internet to put it up. So I'll go to a place where I use the high-speed internet, put your interview up today or tomorrow. It'll be on a WordPress site called Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. On this Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio WordPress site, your interview will be the most recent interview up on there, and I believe it tells everything people need to know to start taking action on this for themselves and for the people that are over there continuing to be exposed. And I'll email you the link to that that interview, and then you can use it as best you can to distribute it around to people that you're in contact with.
Thank you.
Well, it's been great. I really appreciate it. This has been probably one of my favorite interviews because it's just so powerful. It's just so much a part of my life in being, having, you know, I started studying this open trash burning way back in the late 90s. Like, in 1997, I was looking for information about this because there was so much trash burning going on around my hometown, my area here. I live in upstate New York in the St. Lawrence River Valley. And there was so much trash burning in this St. Lawrence County where I live that you could just smell those plastic fumes so, you know, quite often. And I knew in my gut that was not healthy, breathing that stuff. And I started looking for information, and it was just right there. They had just published that big report on the trash burning and the evaluation of the emissions, and the key point was lots of dioxin being produced by these fires.
It's a shame.
Yep, it's a terrible thing. It should never have been done. The most powerful thought that comes to my mind, the first thing that comes to my mind is it should never have happened. Not in 2008 and 2009. No way.
No. There's different ways to do things. We have to get rid of stuff, but you also need to protect all the people that are protecting you as well.
That's right. The military personnel, they're doing a dangerous job, and there are other sources. You know, things get bombed and they burn. You're getting exposed to, you know, chemicals that are extraordinary and, you know, beyond the normal life. To add on to that, this totally unnecessary choice of how to dispose of solid waste, they didn't have to do that. They could have stored it and, you know, recycled it and tried to handle it. They could have not just tried, they could have succeeded in handling it in a way that it released no poison to your environment, and you would have had no damage to your body from, and you would have had no body burden of those chemicals that are in any way, you know, associated with that trash. It did not have to have any effect on you whatsoever, you know.
I wish that would have happened.
Well, yep, if only. And it's a matter for the future, you know. You lived through it, you suffered it, and now you're talking about it and bringing the truth out about it. And that's, you're doing the best you can, and I honor you. I honor my father for being a Navy veteran, and I honor you for being a Navy veteran. And thanks for the good work you do. And I, you know, I feel like saying I'm sorry that it happened, and that, you know, it's not good enough. All I can say is that I will do my best to bring an end to it and to help out on this.
Thank you.
Yep. Well, good luck, Anthony. I hope that, you know, you succeed in beating this cancer. And I believe you will. I believe you will.
I hope so. Thank you again.
Yep, thanks, Anthony. Have a great day.
You too.
This has been Donald Hussig with Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. Just did a powerful interview with Anthony Thornton. He's a naval veteran. He's a person that is clear-mindedly dealing with a terrible experience he had. And this is what people got to do. We've got to all come together and clear-mindedly work hard on dealing with the careless, unsafe use of chemicals, the careless, unsafe disposal of chemicals, and just create a healthier world for all of us by using the scientific knowledge that exists to protect the environment and protect our bodies. This is Don Hussig with Grassroots Environmental Protection Radio. Good day.